Earlier this week, I'm sure you heard or followed a story that came up in the news, and it still has what they call legs. It's still being talked about now. It's based on a memo that was leaked from the Department of Homeland Security, that department that we have in the United States government that was created after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, purposely for the point of prosecuting terror threats that may take place home and abroad, insofar as it has the authority to do so. You know, Washington will always leak these particular memos here, mostly as trial balloons to see how people, the general reaction of people to them. They'll know how to make certain adjustments along the way, and then eventually what was leaked and maybe had been a public uproar for a little while, give it a year or two or a little bit more, and pretty soon the public's attitude toward it is softened, and whatever had been leaked now becomes something that's a reality. It's what has been leaked in that memo that is particularly disturbing, because they made sure to bring up what they call new designations, or new way they're going to be looking at possible either terrorist threats or groups of people according to their ideology that could lead them to the point of becoming or affiliating themselves with terrorists and being either extreme right and being involved in bombings and murders and things of that particular nature, a threat to the United States government and the safety of its people. The first ones they mentioned were military returning from war. They thought that they would be very susceptible to the very extreme right to join with them in their cause, and in that way join up and become a threat with using their military knowledge, a threat to the country, and things of that nature. And that has got something that's continuing to be discussed and going on with more and more as the news continues. But what next came out on the day in which this memo was leaked and made it to the news, but really hasn't been discussed much since, is another classification they've come up with for those who are considered to be people who are either not directly terrorist threats themselves, but because of their ideology and its lack of being mainstream, that because of that ideology will lead people to join up with or have followed the same practices of those who are considered terrorist threats. Now, this idea of being non-mainstream in values is what's important here in the area of consideration. Being non-mainstream takes on many things. It can either be that a person is pro-life when the majority of the country is going in a direction of pro-choice. And so they figure with somebody, if they're going to have that attitude toward it, they're also going to have certain other attitudes that of themselves are going to be something that's dangerous in society and could lead to insurrection and all kinds of other problems that will take place. So if you are non-mainstream at this particular point, then you're expressing what, well, let's call it conservative values. I don't mean politically conservative. I mean you're conserving the points of either a tradition or a law, keeping them conserved according to their proper values. Liberty would mean, or libertarian or liberal would mean, the idea of taking false liberty and going away from those laws and either venting new ones or relaxing them, because the way the times are is to have that point of relaxation, which of itself is not going to bring a good to society. And so when we're talking about those particular values that society today, or these, at least this memo, shows a great concern toward, is those who may be speak contrary to gay and lesbian ideas of making it legal, mutually legal, and acceptable. They're opposed to the legalization of same-sex marriage, especially as it comes state by state by state, now as it gets greater and greater along the way. There are those who are opposed to the legalization of euthanasia, the mercy killing of those whom they say are sick, but leads to people taking their own lives just out of either despair or whatever else it might be. They say they have safeguards for it, but those safeguards don't always work. And so opposition to any of these things is non-mainstream, because the mainstream of people accept them. The opposition we have for this is not based upon an opposition just to a government ideal, or just to be sticks in the mud and want to be able to hold on to something, but it's actually based upon the points of the natural law, which a majority of people today, either making laws or coming through our universities and colleges and even public high schools or whatever it might be, have no longer received training in the natural law. They show that it's dismissed and never take it away. They've developed new systems of philosophy, which totally dismiss the whole notion of a natural law that God has imparted in man by his nature, certain things that he must follow. Among these are the points that are part of nature, the way God has created man, the way he has given to man certain powers and rights and whatever it might be. All these come from the points of the natural law. If you get rid of the natural law, then all of a sudden things that would be against nature, so abortion, homosexuality, euthanasia, for example, those activities, those behaviors, are all contrary to the natural law, all contrary to the way God made us and our human nature. And if we oppose them in society today, we are non-mainstream. And if we are non-mainstream, according to this leaked memo, we're people who need to be watched. This is going to fit also for people in the area of traditional Catholicism, because we are non-mainstream. We are not associating with the bigger structure, the modern church. We've rejected it. We've gone on our own at this particular point, held up to values that the modern church, going along with the world, has set aside themselves. According to the Gospel of Diversity, and many other particular things, they have stepped aside from certain points and have found themselves to be accepted by modern society, by the world itself, because of the profession of their beliefs, but yet in doing so have stepped aside from what the Catholic Church has always professed and believed and has wanted society to follow along with too. All these things are what are called non-mainstream. It was interesting when the head of the Department of Homeland Security was caught, you know, about this and asked by several people in the media what is meant by these particular things. The explanation given was, oh, that's just Washington wordsmithing. You know, iron smithing is the idea where, you know, if you take iron and you put it into a hot fire and get it glowing red and then you beat it and form it into something. Wordsmithing is to find the right word to say the right thing. And so the excuse here is saying, oh, this is just the wrong choice of words. There's no explanation saying that this is not what they believe and what they consider to be true. They're just saying this was a wrong choice of words. I don't really believe that it was. I think this is just the way these particular events take place. I look at this as being a warning shot across the bow, if you will. For a number of years now, I've already known that there are watch lists that are out there among the various legal organizations out there, watch lists that are out there for people looking at those who express too conservative a value, who profess things that are too much non-mainstream, who might say some things against Jewish practice, so we'll have Holy Week and Good Friday the way that we practiced it instead of the way the modern church will do it, so we offend certain parts of the Jews or whatever else it might be because we're following what the church has always taught. I know about these things because I know for a number of at least 2 or 3 years in the past, my name has been on some kind of a watch list. Not a big thing. It's not anything I get all terrified about and worried and paranoid about, but I just know that I'm a more public figure. I write things. It's out there, what my belief is. Google my name and you'll find many, many references to the things that I have written and even some of the sermons that I've given. I have no care that I'm public in this particular way because at some point, some way, we must profess what the church teaches to society. We must be the light that is set on the lampstand that gives light to the gospel to people. And even so, in some small way that we can do so from this small parish church to assist people to understand what the true and traditional values are, then that's what we will do. And if it offends some particular point or people want to call us, or me particularly, non-mainstream, it doesn't bother me. But it just shows that with this memo that was leaked, they've stepped it up a little bit. They've stepped up this idea of referring to us, to those who will not cave into political correctness in that sense, who are not afraid to be the pimple on society, who are not afraid to bring forth and say things that are important that society must know if they are going to come to God the way they should, and to recognize that a society and its values right now are greatly contrary to the law of God, if not the direct law of God and the commandments, most assuredly the natural law. Now, for some people, knowing about these things, hearing about these things, seeing the direction this will go, you know, I'm not that old, but I know in my lifetime that I have seen these similar type of trial balloons being floated. And within a few years, that which was all of a sudden, when the trial balloon was first floated, that society and many people reacted greatly to it because they kept pounded and pounded with it. Eventually, they succumbed to the point, maybe if not total agreement, but the point there was no longer vocal opposition to it anymore. Because they think, well, everybody's starting to believe it, what can I do? We have our own, you know, young people that are going to colleges and universities today. These ideas, and some of the things I'm explaining right here and more, are being pounded and pounded in their heads. And so they're supposed to be professing traditional Catholicism, but they're finding with themselves this mixture of going along with the world and its values and societies, and yet still saying, I am traditional Catholic. It's being pounded and pounded and pounded into them by their teachers, by people around them, by different events they must take place in, certain places of employment where people have. You must go to certain classes that keep you thinking this particular way, keep you thinking this way all the time. Because this, after all, as I said, is where society finds its right and true way. And if you step out of line, there is either peer pressure in school or there is punishment on the job. And so you're left to fear if you do not follow these particular things. You're left to fear those above you because you are trying to profess, hoping to profess, what you know in your Catholic mind and conscience you should do, but because all these pressures are coming to bear, and so fear comes upon you, and you don't. It's better to change and let my peers see that I'm not opposed to them. Go along and not be pressured at job or whatever it might be by following these ideals rather than standing up and saying, I will not go along with it. I know this is wrong. Fire me. Go ahead. Don't want to be friends with me at school? Fine. I don't need that. I'm here to love and serve God. That's what's more important. So what I mean by being a pimple in society, standing up, being noticed, even causing pain. I mention all this not to be political because the church doesn't want, you know, priests being political from the pulpit. But I mention all this as something that's come up recently and which I am convinced will come to pass in the next few years. We're going to see more and more pressure come to bear upon people of faith to abandon their faith for the new faith that is out there in society today. And if you don't, you'll be made to fear the fact that you should be doing it or else type thing. Well, I mention this because I want you to understand then what the fear the apostles had and what we read in the gospel story of today. This section of St. John's gospel is there to explain to us about the fear, as it says, the apostles were going through. They were in the upper room for the fear of the Jews because they knew that if they stepped outside, if they walked around, many people knew them, and for all they knew, they would be put to death for the same things that they hold and told and taught that their master did. Remember, from time to time, Jesus sent the apostles out two by two to preach and to teach and even to cure and to heal. They had that power even while he was alive on earth. They were known people. They were known all around. This is why Peter could be discovered while he was warming himself by the fire while Jesus was being tried by the Sanhedrin. Jesus fulfilled the prophecy, or rather Peter received, fulfilled the prophecy that Jesus had said of him, that he would deny him, and that brought great sorrow to Peter's heart. But still it just showed that they were known people. And so they were gathered together in the upper room there out of fear. Fear because they know these things could take place, and for all they know, they could be put to death as well by professing some things that are non-mainstream, that go contrary to what the Pharisees have taught. And if the Pharisees could so persuade the Romans to put Jesus to death, then it could very much happen they could do it to them. Oh, great fear. Great fear they had in their hearts. But it was a fear they needed to overcome. It was a fear that was based purely on human ideas, human fear. They needed to be strengthened. They needed to be assured that what is all set before them is all that God will assist them if they stay true to their beliefs. I know somewhere at the Mass last Sunday, I gave a little bit of an understanding of this particular talk last week too, but I want to expand on this particular point more, because this notion of fear and what it does, how crippling it is. One of the most crippling thing that this type of fear does is it cripples our faith. It makes us believe less and less in the power of God. It makes us believe less and less in God's love for us. In fact, what it helps us or causes us to do is to start to change our own way of believing. We have a basis for what we believe. We get influenced by people on the outside. We're being influenced in such a way that if we depart too much from what we've been told by the people on the outside, then we're going to be going against them, kicking against the goad, if you will, going non-mainstream. And so in our fear of that, we develop a new kind of faith. We start to justify in our own minds, well, this isn't that bad. This is okay. Everybody else is saying this, so therefore it must be true, simply because everybody else is saying it. This is a bit of what it's like with St. Thomas, what happens with him. We see that on that first Easter day, the apostles are gathered in the upper room. They're afraid. They know what will happen. But they have forgotten what Jesus has told them. They have forgotten that he would be put to death and on the third day would rise again. And so they are there in fear, having forgotten the very words of Christ. They didn't listen as they should, only listen to themselves and their hearts and their natural ways. And Jesus comes in right through the walls. The doors are shut, showing he has this glorified body. He brings peace to them. And he gives them the power to forgive sins. And then he leaves. They're so happy, St. John says. He was present there, so happy. They have seen the Lord. It brings them confidence, brings them strength. Whatever fear they had before is starting to go away, and rather quickly. But then there's Thomas. Thomas wasn't there. And so when the other apostles meet with Thomas within a day or so and explain what had happened and what he had missed, perhaps more out of sorrow in his heart, but regardless of what it was, envy, jealousy, because they had seen the Lord and Christ didn't come and appear to him directly or whatever else it might be, Thomas starts to issue new demands of faith. New demands of faith he never had before while he walked with Jesus. He could see miracles, didn't need to have them explained. They were just done. But now Jesus has come. He has risen from the dead. And now he puts these conditions on God. Unless I can see, unless I can feel, I will not believe. But what a change in faith. What a change in idea. Fear has caused that. Fear has taken that. And maybe a point of envy that others can have a simpler faith in what he has. An envy in that, that causes him to think and to say such things. Whatever it is. This is where Thomas is. It's amazing the Gospels, it's one point that proves to us the Gospels really are true, is that every now and then they show to us some of the apostles themselves in more vulnerable times, helping us to see just who they were in their faults and failings, and then by grace, the grace of God, how they changed. Well, anyway, as it is with Thomas, he issues the challenge. Jesus accepts it. 1 week later, while they're all together, gathered together in the upper room again, Christ comes once again in, and he tells Thomas, he has heard the challenge, come here. And Thomas wants to now feign simple faith. He's afraid. He's afraid because he has been heard by Christ. His new faith that he had developed on his own is now being challenged by God himself, and that new faith is just starting to will it away because it really has no strength. It has no purpose behind it. He doesn't at least at first want to go, but Jesus calls him to him. He places his hands on the side. He's able to touch Jesus. He says those wonderful words, my Lord and my God. But now comes the rebuke of Jesus to Thomas. Thou hast said these things, Thomas, because thou hast seen. You believe that I am risen because you've seen me and touched me. But I'm telling you, blessed are they who now and in the future who have not seen such things and yet believe. who do not need this demonstrated faith, but have a simple faith. They know the faith like St. John describes for us in the closing lines of today's epistle. Not everything that Jesus said and did is written down. It doesn't need to be. He wrote down what is necessary for one purpose so you can believe. You can have that simple faith because he is an eyewitness. Trust me. He says, my testimony is true. I know it is true, he says in his gospel. I know it is true because I'm an eyewitness. I know these things took place. What I am telling you right now is sufficient to have great faith, strength that you need in this society that we're in today, in this time of upcoming persecution. To be able to know Jesus Christ and all about him can come from a simple faith. It doesn't take deep theology. Blessed are they who see, who have not seen, rather, and yet believe. Blessed are they who accept the teaching and the authority of tradition that comes down from time. Blessed are they who accept the teachings of the church because we know the church is guided by the Holy Ghost, who do not come back to question it with their own type of faith and say, who does the church think it is? I have my own ideas regarding these particular things. I don't think the church is right in this particular topic. Who are we to question the church? This is not just some society, some big organization that's out there. This is the church of Christ himself, founded by Christ himself and kept true and alive by the Holy Ghost. That's the confidence we place in it. And it's that simple faith that when the church tells me this is what I should do, that brings peace to my heart instead of worrying about all these extra things I need to have, this different kind of faith that I'm proposing here. Yes, it is true from time to time. We do need to investigate a little bit more on certain things, and that we do. But to constantly be in that frame of mind, to constantly be of such a nature that all we can do is show forth our doubt or make sure that my faith is done my way and God better bend to my way of doing it, of my way of thinking, then we're going contrary to what Jesus has told to Thomas. Blessed are they who have not seen, but who have believed with that simple belief, and that's all that's necessary. Society today is out there right now to change things, to give qualified systems of belief. My biggest fear, it's not a fear, it's my biggest worry, is that I see good Catholics going into the universities that are out there or going into workplace. And then when they're challenged in their faith, to start to see them slip in certain areas because their faith is not strong. People, either because of the strength of their other people, because of the strength of their personality, a force of words, a charism they have, just even the threat of saying, I will not be your friend anymore if you don't believe these things. All of a sudden, people who are supposed to be good Catholics, to profess to be that, will start to fail in that challenge and fall away. If not completely, but start to accept values that have nothing to do with Catholicism, everything to do with a different system of belief that is contrary to what we teach, to what has been taught for centuries since the time of the apostles. Modern schools are out there and they will rip that stuff from you by the people around you, the associations what you have, the professors that are there. They make it a particular point to say this is now mainstream. And if you have any of these other traditional beliefs and the way you talk, the way you dress, the morals that you have, you're non-mainstream. You're going against society. You are wrong, and we will persecute you one way or the other. And unfortunately, not everybody is strong enough. Not everybody has that great faith. Like St. Thomas, they start to challenge. Well, okay, maybe you're right. Maybe if this was there, or maybe because this news program said this, or because some archaeologist found this particular thing, maybe they are right. I need an answer back from the church for this archaeologist, this particular thing, and therefore maybe I'll believe. When the answers have always been there. And so simple faith is lost, and now becomes this complicated type faith. So complicated that we only start to believe if we accept it. Faith is no longer based upon trusting the authority from God himself and coming through the church and what I believe. No, it's if I accept it. That's the source of all faith here. It starts and ends with me. Poor people. They will never receive the reward. The reward that Jesus promises, and he broke promise to Thomas. Blessed are they who have not seen, but yet believe. Blessed are they who have a simple heart toward faith and believe more firmly than they've ever done so before, who will not let society and its values take them away, who will not let the world come in and remove from them that very faith which they had from the beginning. Started out talking today about the points of politics and the direction society is going. Step by step, the various things that you and I hold dear in the practice of our faith will be challenged, if not by society itself, at least in schools, by neighbors or whatever, or even family members that have fallen away. Our system of belief will be challenged. What comes up to it now is, what will you and I do when that challenge comes forth? How will we handle the challenge? What will be our spirit of faith in those times? Will we be willing to be that pimple on society and stand up and show forth and say, I don't care how you are, you're wrong. You are wrong, and you're wrong because of this. Not just because Father says so, go ask Father. He can explain it. No, I know why you're wrong. I understand the truths of my faith. I understand them in such a simple way, I can explain it to the most complicated person and show that your complicated system of beliefs are wrong, because faith is that simple. It is not the faith of simpletons. It is a faith of simplicity that doesn't have to be complicated. It is just a faith that's based, God has said so, therefore it's true. That's the faith that you and I need. We're going to need it even more stronger day by day as times go on. This little leaked memo that we talk about here is just a trial balloon. Within a few years, we're going to see more pressure come to play upon those of us who are non-mainstream. My prayer for you today is that, knowing that it's going to take great faith to persevere through such times of simple persecution, which could lead on to even more, I'm not trying to be an alarmist, I'm trying to be a realist here. I've seen enough changes in society in my life to know if it starts here now, within a few years, it'll be accepted. That's where we are today with this leaked memo and non-mainstream people and their beliefs. If that doesn't put the fear of God into you, but where society is, and that we need to pray that we are stay strong and don't yield to society, so much so that we lose our faith, then I don't know what will put the fear of God into you to understand those things. My prayer for you is that this simple but strong faith that we know will be so necessary to persevere in our times right now and in the future will be yours, and yours in abundance. May God give you this reward of faith that comes after praying and begging and pleading for it yourself. Live by this faith, and you will see that God will always be with you to strengthen you and give you the peace that no other person can ever give. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen.